Siding Unlimited, named the best window installers, not just here, but in the whole USA. Get the best. Siding Unlimited, 5-time winner as America's best window installer. For windows you call Siding Unlimited, first and directly, SidingUnlimited.com.
Live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios in downtown Milwaukee, it's Wisconsin's Midday News, making stories come to life. Now, here are your hosts, Greg Matzik and Jessica Tai.
So you were in Denver yesterday, just for a brief period of time, right? Flying for the game, fly out, get back home, but did you feel the sun? Did you feel the warmth? It looked like a beautiful day in Denver. It really did.
Oh my gosh, that reminds me. I think I took a snapshot of what the temperature was when we left Milwaukee. The flight left at 8:05 in the morning, and yep, I did. -2. It was 2 below when we left. And it felt like 17 below. It was cold, but yes, it was a beautiful day, like low 60s in Denver. The sun was shining. If only we could have flown back with a win.
Yeah, everything except the game, right? It was a beautiful day in Denver.
It was a really good start to the game, too.
Yeah.
And if you would have taken out our injuries, it was an action-packed game that was really fun to watch in a fantastic atmosphere. I'd never been out to Denver for a football game before. The Broncos fans, I mean, they make it fun. That place is loud, but... Yeah, not the outcome us Packers fans were looking for.
No, a little more on the Packers here throughout the program today, including a pair of major injuries. One major, I should say. One, well, it looks like they avoided a major injury, but still, Packers are finding themselves in a not-so-great spot here with 3 games left to play in the regular season.
And now it's time for 3 Big Things on Wisconsin's Midday News.
Number one, the person of interest with ties to Cedarburg, Wisconsin, who was detained in connection with the deadly shooting at Brown University, has been released from custody. Now the search resumes for the shooter. 2 students died in that shooting. 9 others were hurt. Students were preparing for final exams when the shots rang out. Ref Bari is one of those students. He says once he realized those shots were inside the building where he was studying, he ran away as fast as he could. Ari also says many students are scared right now since investigators have not arrested anyone yet.
My parents came last night at 12:30 a.m. and picked me up, but some of my friends are still in their dorms, and I can't imagine. I don't know. It's just scary.
Investigators say it wasn't a mistake taking the person of interest in custody. They just didn't have anyone or didn't have enough to prosecute anyone. CBS's Anna Schechter will join us during our next hour with the latest on this investigation.
Number two, under arrest, Nick Reiner, the son of director and actor Rob Reiner, and his wife Michelle, after they were found stabbed to death in their Los Angeles home. ABC's Alex Stone.
The arrest of Rob Reiner's son coming earlier today. Sources are telling us it is for suspicion of murder, but no charges have been filed yet. The district attorney will decide on charges in the next couple of days. He's being held on $4 million bail. The LAPD making the arrest after they spent all night here at the Reiner home where I am right now. They have since moved out. There is no activity beyond the walls of the Reiner home. There is a white gate out front, high hedges around the home. Inside, there are holiday decorations around the house.
So we're learning some new details on what may have happened. Rob Reiner apparently got into a very heated exchange with his son at a Christmas party. They were at Conan O'Brien's Christmas party on Saturday this weekend. Rob and Nick got into a very loud argument, this being reported by Yahoo Entertainment and TMZ. And the outlets also report others in attendance were able to hear that argument. Rob and his wife Michelle left the party, and a short time later, they were found dead in their homes. As for Nick Reiner, he has a long history of addiction and substance abuse. He's 32 years old, admitted in previous interviews that he had battled addiction since the age of 15. So it's not clear what their relationship was, but the three were together apparently at a holiday party at Conan O'Brien's house over the weekend.
Number three. Summerfest is rolling along with the concert announcements. With today's new reveal, we now know 2/3 of the lineup for the American Family Insurance Amphitheater. Jelly Roll Festival performs along Milwaukee's lakefront on Saturday, July 4th, the final day of Summerfest. Tyler Hubbard is a special guest. Tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. You've got some people grabbing their phones right now. Okay, remind me, tickets go on sale Friday at 10 a.m. Jelly Roll, by the way, last played in Milwaukee about 2 years ago when he headlined the Harley-Davidson homecoming. That was a big deal. So if you look at the calendar here, I was plotting it out this morning. I was actually wondering if you would have noticed this when you walked into the room, Greg. I was plotting it out. I had like little boxes. I did the little dates. I put all the people in because I think every year it's a puzzle, and I really enjoy doing this.
You like seeing the spreadsheet populate, right?
I
do. Is that what you like doing?
So we know who will open Summerfest this year: Megan Maroney on Thursday, June 18th, and who will close the festival: Jelly Roll on July 4th. We also know Ed Sheeran, Post Malone, Muse, and Alex Warren. They're in the middle there. That means three big headliners remain for the Amphitheater during Summerfest. Who will they be?
What was interesting is that Garth Brooks was announced as a Summerfest headliner, but it's like a kickoff event. Like it's
Those are bonus concerts.
They really are. Well, it's interesting because I get it. It's at the Summerfest grounds, but it's well before Summerfest actually begins. It likely these were the open dates on the calendar, on the routing schedule for Garth Brooks, and he wanted to get him. He's a big name act. Doesn't feel like Summerfest to me, but they're putting it under the umbrella of Summerfest and calling it a kickoff concert. Okay, fine. It's still Garth Brooks, and the folks at Summerfest, Milwaukee World Festival, had to book him.
Right, and it's the Garth Brooks concerts are June 16th and 17th. So it is right before, because you've got Summerfest that starts on Thursday, June 18th. They did that once before. Who was it with? It was years ago where, like, the night before Summerfest, they had a big concert. I can't think of who it was because they just have booked so many good acts over the years. But they kind of just, I think it's like, we'd like to get this person. Could we get them during Summerfest? And then it doesn't work out, is my guess, with the timing of the dates and what they have open. So they're like, why not? Let's do a little something extra. This is actually something very big. I mean, Garth Brooks is big.
No doubt about it. 116 on WTMJ. It looks like the lunch recess is over in the Hannah Dugan trial. WTMJ's Neil Doyle is covering the trial from the courthouse. We will check in with him after this. Well, it's going to be a big story here all week with the eyes of the nation on Milwaukee here. Judge Hannah Dugan's trial underway. No longer business as usual, the quote from the Department of Justice as Hannah Dugan is on trial here throughout the course of the week. Looks like they just finished up a lunch break. They had some opening statements from earlier. It's a federal case, right? So it's a little different in terms of access with cameras and recordings and all that kind of stuff. So thankfully, we have WTMJ's Neil Doyle positioned at the courthouse and joining us on the line here this afternoon. Hi, Neil.
Hi, Greg. Hi, Jessica. Yeah, things are certainly underway, and it is a little different with it being a federal proceeding here. There's no cameras, no recording, you know, no audio recording in the courtroom. So, you know, we can be in the courtroom, that being members of the media, to take in the trial. But there's also a media workroom. There's a broadcast room here for the media as well to kind of do some of this. So things are certainly kind of rolling along here on day one.
So day one, let's take our fans into that courtroom. It started with opening statements this morning. Can you summarize those?
Yeah, even before, Jessica, opening statements, kind of interesting, Judge Lynn Edelman, who's presiding over the case, let us know that actually one of the jury members called in sick. So that was kind of an interesting little caveat to get things going. Both the prosecution and defense saying, what do we kind of do here? They said, well, I think we need to just kind of move forward. So the jury is now technically 13 members and just one alternate instead of two. So that kind of happened. But then, yes, the prosecution came up, gave their opening statement first, and really just kind of hit on some of the main charges that Judge Hannah Dugan is facing, that being obstruction and concealment for her accused role in helping that undocumented man back in April at the courthouse elude some of these federal agents. They also hit on some evidence they have, audio recording from the courthouse that said, according to that recording, has Judge Dugan saying she would take the heat. So they say they've got a number of different pieces of audio and video evidence from the Milwaukee County Courthouse that they will use throughout this trial to kind of show in their eyes that Judge Dugan did obstruct these federal agents from the arrest of this man. Now, on the other side, not as long for an opening statement for the prosecution. They went about 30 minutes or so. Really, again, harped multiple times that Judge Dugan is innocent, maintaining her innocence, and really hitting on as well that they will you know, show throughout the trial as well, from some of the evidence that they have and some of the witnesses that they might question as well, that Judge Dugan was acting within her judicial capacity. So that's kind of what we heard from the defense team as well.
Yeah, that's kind of the big question here, Neil, right? Her intent, did she deliberately obstruct justice, or was she following established court policy and protocols? I don't know how you measure intent specifically, but this will be very interesting to see how the defense and prosecution build both of their cases.
Well, we heard that quite a bit, Greg, from the defense in their opening statement that, right, Judge Dugan was following a draft policy that was put in place by the chief judge over at the Milwaukee County Courthouse, that, you know, they were supposed to let the chief judge know if there were any type of federal agents, whether that be, you know, agents from ICE, the FBI, or any other federal agency. So that's kind of what they, again, were saying, that she was following court policy, that she did not have any intention of obstructing these agents. And the prosecutors and the prosecution certainly disagreeing with that. And kind of their case will hinge a bit on, you know, kind of the steps of court procedures. And they will try to show that Judge Dugan did not follow those procedures correctly and tried to obstruct these federal agents.
Neil, something I took note of was that the defense actually came out and said Judge Dugan is nervous. What else did they say about what this week ultimately means for her?
Yeah, I thought one of an interesting line from was they said it's probably the most important week of her personal life. You know, again, this case is getting national attention because you've got the federal government prosecuting a judge, not something we've really ever seen before. So, you know, we heard from the defense that, you know, she is nervous. She certainly wants to show that she is innocent because she has maintained that innocence throughout. You know, there were talks of would there be a plea deal in this case that did not come to fruition. And now we are here on day one of this trial. So it's going to be interesting how this kind of unfolds here the next couple of days.
Neil, just from a work standpoint, I mean, you Google Hannah Dugan, and yes, you see something here in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel on our website, WTMJ.com, Fox Pick, 6, all the local outlets, and then, of course, CNN. And I'm looking at my CBS wires right now. Immigration judge arrested. That's some of the latest filings here. Do you get a sense that this is a national case from where you stand? Are you noticing some folks who maybe you don't often see around the area of Milwaukee representing larger national outlets?
I certainly have seen a lot of our local TV stations and stations and media outlets from across the state, but no, there is a national presence. I haven't seen any national correspondent or report go at least Thursday. So I'd be curious over the next day or two, if, you know, you start to see maybe some of those bigger reporters on the national outlets that maybe start to show up. No, there is.
Sounds like we're losing Neil a little bit there, but thanks, Neil. I think part of that, too, and that's just my guess being in, you know, having been in TV for about 2 decades there. I think if cameras were allowed in the courtroom, we would be seeing everybody.
Yeah.
All of those national outlets would have correspondents here. Again, this has been a very busy couple of days for breaking news. There are a lot of big stories around, but I think part of the reason that we're not seeing as many people is because cameras are not allowed in the courtroom. So you can monitor this in other ways and still report it and still get the news out.
Yeah, I think it was Scott McFarlane, our friend and CBS congressional correspondent, who was in Milwaukee in what must have been early May, late April, early May, as this story was really developing. He spent about 24 hours in the city of Milwaukee. I don't know if he's going to be back for part of this trial. I guess we'll ask him on Wednesday. But it is sort of eye-popping to note, if you do a Google on Hannah Dugan trial, it's up on CNN.com. It's up on CBS. It's up on the major national websites here that cover news. So, yes, national attention, no doubt, for this local story.
Well, and you have judges across the country who are watching this to see what happens. I mean, Judge Dugan is nervous, but you have people across the country that are waiting to see how the jury is going to respond to this case.
We'll stay on it the rest of the day here and the week as this trial begins today, and it could wrap up toward the back end of this week. Well, I hope you got through it, whatever that was over the weekend weather-wise. It's kind of one of those weekends. We were in the Dells. My daughters had a futsal tournament, which is like this cool 4-on-4 with a goalie indoor. It's kind of like It's kind of like indoor soccer, but a much smaller floor, and it's a hardwood floor typically. It's very fast-paced, very fun. So they had a tournament in the Dells.
Was it up at one of, did you stay at one of the water park hotels?
We didn't. We're Marriott people, so we find the nearest Spring Hill Suites to wherever we need to be, and we're good to go.
Want to get
that.
Those points, okay.
But we had to leave our car parked outside overnight.
Oof.
Right? You want to talk about angry vehicles in the parking lot, like just the sound of cars starting in the morning, right? You want to get that thing warmed up a little bit, otherwise you're getting into a cold car. It's like nothing worked. You know, the wipers don't work. It just everything is painful. But we were able to get through it, thankfully. And some warmer days here on the horizon. We welcome in TMJ4 meteorologist Lauren Larson. Hi, Lauren.
Yeah. Hey, guys. Happy Monday.
We got through it. Did you have an angry vehicle over the weekend?
Yeah, absolutely. I was smiling as you were talking about that because I think most people know exactly what that sounds like. You're used to your car, you know, turning over after two tries or whatever, and it just kind of like sits there slowly thinking about it. Mm. It's not comfortable, and it was so cold this weekend. But like you said, we do have some warmer days ahead. Even today feels significantly warmer than it did this time yesterday.
Lauren, he kept saying, but we got through it. We got through it. I didn't get through it. I got out of Dodge.
Yeah, you left.
I left the state. I went to warmer weather. I went up to Denver, where it was like in the 60s for the Packers game. But
yes.
I will say, coming back, so the flight left at 8:05 yesterday morning when it was 2 below. And then coming back, I think we got in a little bit after 12:30 last night. And coming in, that car was absolutely frozen.
Oh, gosh.
But here's the thing. You mentioned it. We're warmer today. It still feels really cold, but there is some sense of relief. So what are our temperatures looking like as we go on the upswing here?
Yeah, well, they're definitely looking positive. We have no negative numbers in store for us here throughout the next week. I'm excited to report that. Today, we still have a few degrees to climb. We should make it to 20 for most of us. And then we're looking at those temperatures above freezing in the mid to upper 30s for Tuesday and Wednesday, and maybe even hitting 40 as we look later into the work week and maybe again this weekend. So I'm not ruling out a couple of 40-degree days, which we'll definitely see some melting with that. That is also above normal. Our normal or average high temperature for today is 36. So we have not been above average in quite a while. I'm looking forward to crossing that landmark.
So a little bit of melting. Are we thinking that here for midweek?
Yeah, I do think Thursday specifically that high temperature is 40. But we also will see some rain with that. So that may speed up the process a little bit as far as the snow. But a lot of the ice that I'm seeing on the side of the city streets, I don't have a lot of confidence that the 40 degrees is necessarily going to make a good dent in that.
Oh, that's a really good point, because I've also seen some driveways where people, you know, they did the work, but they didn't do enough. So it kind of that little slush that we had, it wasn't gone. So then it got iced over, got frozen over, and it created ice. So, okay, that's really important to know, because I was thinking that maybe for those people that Mother Nature would help with that. Okay, really good to know about that. I know this is not on your forecast yet, but I know you guys are always looking ahead and people are asking the questions. So I'm just curious what your thoughts are on if we could see, obviously we're not gonna see a ton of it this week, but as we go into next week, are you seeing anything that could make you believe that we might have a little bit of a white Christmas or no?
I love your wording on this. Maybe, might be, could be, potentially.
I know it's too early, I know, but people are asking.
Yes, for sure. Nothing really bringing that confidence up. If we do see kind of a change in location for that 40-degree day and the rain on Thursday, that could actually be snow if that low-pressure system tracks a little bit farther south. So that's really the only thing that I'm seeing as we go throughout the next couple of weeks. Maybe, you know, a chance for a little bit of snow, but there isn't anything that I'm really excited about or watching as far as weather systems.
All right, that's okay. All right, a little bit of melting this week, warmer temperatures. If you haven't put up the Christmas lights, go ahead and do it. Maybe your dog will want to go back outside. Ours is boycotting, which is becoming a bit of an issue. Yeah, I ain't going out there. You kidding me? You go out there and go to the bathroom.
You blame them?
No, I don't. It's not at all. Good stuff, Lauren. We'll check in again tomorrow.
Thanks, Lauren.
Sounds good. Yep. Have a great day.
145 on WTMJ. I want to dive into your experience in Denver a little bit more because things were off to a smoking hot start here for the Green and Gold.
Really was.
I could hear the Go Pack Go chants through the radio.
Oh, you could.
Which
good.
Was really impressive. And then
especially in that stadium, yeah.
Then everything shifted. Ugh. We'll talk about it all. Pack Yak. Maybe a little more like Pack Yuck. We'll get to it after this.
It's time for Pack Yak on Wisconsin's Midday News. Yellow, yellow.
Well, things started off pretty well in Denver yesterday in a battle of two first-place teams.
Love looking downfield, lofting to the end zone. It's Jacobs with the catch. Oh, my goodness. What a grab by the running back with Greenlaw in coverage.
Jim Nance and Tony Romo on the call. Sounded like a home game, right? You hear the fans cheering in the background. A third down touchdown pass from Jordan Love to Josh Jacobs. Amazing catch, incredible play. And the crowd's going wild. But the game was in Denver, right? So many Packers fans were there, including you. What a great opportunity to see the Packers on the road.
There were so many Packers fans out there. It was fun. In fact, we flew out just kind of last minute, same day decision. And so we got out there. We had a couple hours to spare before the game. So we're just checking out downtown Denver, you know, went to grab a bite to eat. And it was so fun because on the streets, so many Packers fans, so many cheeseheads. We went by the one Wisconsin bar and actually went in just to kind of see what was going on. It was packed, not a seat to be had. Such a blast. You could definitely hear the Go Pack Go during the game. You could also then hear a Go Home Go from the right. Broncos fans. But I'll tell you what, for as enthusiastic as we were out there as Packers fans in Broncos land in Denver, those fans in that stadium, that was the first time I had experienced that. They are so loud, and that stadium, the atmosphere is so intense. When they start, you're kind of standing on the steel below you, and when they're pounding their feet, you can feel the vibration. You could feel it in your head, you could feel it in your feet, you could feel it in your body. So that was really, yes, it was a loss. So rough. And then even more so, the injuries, extra rough. But before all that, it was a fun game to watch, and it was a great atmosphere to be in.
Well, it was an amazing start here, too. It's one of the best defenses in all of the NFL, the Denver Broncos. The last time they lost a game was the day the Brewers clinched the NL Central. Think about that for a second, wow. Right? Woof. This team has been on a roll. A lot of very close games, but they've won those games. So Green Bay comes in as a first-place team, playing well, as a favored team on the road against a team that had won 10 straight. So that
kind of
gives
the big Bears game.
Yes, exactly. So it gives you an idea where, you know, Vegas thought the Packers belonged, and they lived up to the billing, right? Five possessions, five straight scoring drives to start the game for the Packers. And that got into the second half on the first drive.
Jacobs, no one near him. Take it off. Jacobs to the end zone for his longest touchdown run of the season.
So it's 23-14. Packers are off and running here. They got a comfortable lead over a team that is kind of hit and miss on offense. But really, Green Bay showed no signs of slowing down on offense of their own until this happened.
They're going deep, and stepping in front is Surtain with the pick, and Watson was hurt. Surtain high-stepping. And slipping by one tackle attempt.
You probably noticed this, Jessica, being at the game. Jordan Love was on a heater in the first half, right? He threw for 215 yards. He has never thrown for that many yards in one half of football. He was on fire. And in the second half, after Christian Watson, their speediest wide receiver, their big deep play threat, maybe the top name on the scouting report for opposing defense, after he goes out, the Packers can't do anything.
I know. It
just nothing. Interceptions and punts and all that kind of stuff. Just 61 passing yards in the second half. The loss of Watson and a really good offensive lineman, Zach Tom, due to injuries, it just derailed the Packers' offense in the second half. They got nothing done.
There was a lot of cheering for us Packers fans in the first half. And then I know for myself, the second half, there was a lot of hands up in the air like, wait, are we going to get that? Are we going to get No, oh no, what do we do? No. And there were times, too, that I felt like we were still in it.
And then all of a sudden we just weren't, and you could feel that. Well, Nick was like, you want to go? I'm like, heck no. Even on those games, I always want to stay until the last minute. I want to be there. I mean, I also feel a part of being a good fan is being there for the ups and the downs, and so we stayed the whole time.
Well, you bring up a very interesting point. It kind of felt like the Packers were in it. Well, I would totally agree. So Denver scored a touchdown with like 7.5 minutes left in the game, and that made it 34-26. Packers get the ball back. All right, get down, score a touchdown,
right,
and do the two-point conversion, and they got a tie ball game. Well, two plays and an interception by Jordan Love. Mm. All right, dang it. Well, somehow the Packers' defense, without Micah Parsons, who's now done for the year with the torn ACL. Ugh,
which was so hard to see.
They get the stop they need. Denver goes out on a fourth down play with an incompletion with about 5 minutes left. All right, here we go. Another chance for the Packers, right? Seven plays, 1 yard, turnover on downs. All right, back to Denver. Denver goes four plays and turns it over on downs again. So the Packers had multiple chances in that fourth quarter to do something, even though they didn't have their best offensive lineman and best wide receiver, and they couldn't do anything. In fact, they went backwards in that time frame. So they had plenty of chances, but it's all for naught. And now, moving forward, here's what happened. How damaging was that loss? You go from first place in the NFC North to second place, but you also plummet from second place in the conference
to like seventh,
to number seven.
Right?
So that is the final playoff spot. Woo! in the NFC. Now, thankfully, teams around the Packers, the Cowboys, the Lions, the Carolina Panthers, they all lost yesterday, amazingly. So just a little bit more breathing room with that seventh and final spot. But what it boils down to is this. Saturday's game against the Bears, you really get the feeling it's for the division. The winner of that game Saturday night goes back into the driver's seat in the division with two games to play. For the Packers, those games will be against the Baltimore Ravens, who have caught fire, and the Minnesota Vikings, who have become a very difficult team to figure out because they looked like the worst team in football for 2 weeks, and they've responded with back-to-back wins, including Sunday night, over the Cowboys. In fact, I think that win for Minnesota actually helps the Packers' playoff chances a little bit because it keeps Dallas a little further away. So who knows what to expect here, but we do know this. Micah Parsons won't be on
the
field.
We're not going to have him. Yeah.
And that's going to affect the Packers' defense for sure.
Ah, that was so rough. I will say, as rough as it was to walk out of that stadium after that, you know, Broncos fans living it up, mile high are their feelings, right? And I will say, a lot of people came up to me actually and said, good game. I was like, well, not as good as you guys,
right.
and it seemed pretty rough there at the end. But they were, you know, I felt like they were friendly about it. But I did hear from a lot of the Packers fans, the response was at the end as people were walking out, well, the Bears still suck. That's how a lot of Packers fans were walking out. Just saying that out loud.
Yeah,
if
that makes you feel better.
But they needed something.
The Bears won 31-3 yesterday, and it's going to be another cold weather game this weekend, of course. But look, this is what you want. Big games, big stakes, late December football. That's what you're going to have here. Division rivals on the field, not unlike what we saw in Green Bay a little over a week ago. It's going to be a very similar situation in Chicago on Saturday night.
And can I just tell you a little behind the scenes here? For some of those fans, those Packers fans who are walking out, you know, feeling sad about the loss and whatnot and then the injuries, they got to see mutton busting during halftime.
I don't know what that is.
Oh my gosh. I thought, well, isn't that worth the price of admission? You had kids who were riding sheep. They had little races, and they had named the sheep, and it was hilarious to see.
Wait, what? You had kids riding
little
sheep?
Little kids, you know, they were holding on to get on the sheep. It's like an adult riding a horse, which, by the way, does happen every time the Broncos get a touchdown. All of a sudden, I think it's Thunder. I think the horse's name is Thunder, and all of a sudden this woman comes in on Thunder, and she, like, goes down the whole field, which that's really fun to see. But, yeah, no, they had these kids at halftime. They got on the sheep. And then they were holding on. Some kids were on for a second. Other kids were on for 8 seconds. And it was this little rodeo for the kids. But they were riding sheep, mutton busting.
The things you didn't know you were going
to
walk into when you stepped inside that stadium. Packers and Bears on Saturday night. Make your schedule apply to Saturday night's game here. Packers and Bears from Chicago.